don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The Streets Don't Love You Back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is March 28th, 2012. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, The Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show tonight. We have author Charles Burgess with us in the house. Charles is from Milwaukee, and Charles says that he's tried many jobs from selling cars to bank products for State Farm Insurance. His biggest fear in life is that he doesn't live long enough to meet the goal of writing 100 books. Charles has traveled to many states and doesn't want to make his home in any one place. His new goal is to share his novels all over the world and even try an attempt to do a child series. His first book, called Homies, is still available online along with his other titles. And tonight we'll find out more about, he has several books out. We'll find out more about them tonight and how you can get those books. Let me go ahead and welcome Boyd to the show.
Yes, how you doing, ladies and gentlemen? And thanks to all the fans that tuned in every week. And without further ado, we'll pass the mic over to Charles and let him formally introduce himself, and we'll get the show started.
This is Charles Burgess, author Charles Burgess, a.k.a. The Storyteller. I'm glad to be in the house tonight with Lucinda and Boyd.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you, and we know that you have a lot of interesting stuff to tell us tonight. Before we find out about your books and how you became an author, tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, your family, and things like that.
Well, I was originally born in Providence, Rhode Island, where one of my novels takes place, that called The Ghetto Sopranos. Moved to Milwaukee as a baby, so I didn't really get to see Rhode Island. Grew up in, urban area in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and traveled, as age got, did a little stint in Michigan, was in Detroit for a while, Benton Harbor for a while, and right now I'm in Phoenix, Arizona.
All right. And how was your family life growing up? Did you have mom and dad, brothers and sisters, or were you in a broken home? Tell us a little bit about all that.
Well, I grew up in the house with a mother and a grandmother and a grandfather, lots of aunts and uncles. My sister, I do have a sister on my father's side. She lives in Alabama. Because of Facebook, now we found each other again, and we always had a way to find each other through an aunt on my father's side. But now that we found each other on Facebook, it's easier to communicate. But as far as a broken home, I don't really think I had a rough life if I didn't choose to live a rough life. My mother's a master's degree, Marquette University. She owns the largest State Farm insurance agency in the Midwest. She's the largest 30 years in business. Most of my aunts are successful. So, most of the choices I made through life was choices that I made.
Right. So a lot of your books, although I believe they're fiction, they are stories that you write about things that you know from the streets. So obviously you had some time out getting to know the street life a little bit. Is that cool?
When I started the writing thing, the first book I ever really wrote was not published. It was called Black Baller, and it was about me and some of my friends and the total street life. It was a book that I read it by hand and passed it around, and people really did go crazy about the story itself. But I never published a book. I never really knew much about publishing at the time. That was many, many years ago. The first book I wrote, I actually wrote the book after reading a novel by the author Zhang, and it was more geared towards three professional men that all had problems having a monogamous relationship. A doctor, an engineer from GE Medical, and an NFL football player. And each of these guys had a problem growing up why they didn't trust one woman and they didn't want to be with one woman. They wouldn't even date one woman solely. If one got a date, she would have to bring two of her friends. So that story was, I thought that story was a good story, even though fiction. I mean, a lot of guys in the professional world, I think, go that route. You know, I have friends now that are very professional, very financially stable, and still scared in their lifetime to settle down. So that one story was something that I felt needed to be told.
Right. And tell us a little bit more about some of your other books and which ones you have published.
Don't Say You Do If You Don't was my second book. In each one of my books, people try to portray which character I am. In that first book I told you about, they wanted to say I was the engineer because I did do a stint at GE Medical myself. But in my second book, Don't Say You Do If You Don't, that book was about a guy who went through hell to meet his wife to get her to notice him. He was still in college, and she was a nurse at a hospital across the street from the college. He went so far as staging himself as a parking guy, parking her car every day, and she finally noticed him. They finally get together. Well, he becomes a successful mortgage broker, and she's this high-powered nurse, and they end up having a long-term marriage and three kids. She had one kid when she met him. They had two together, and after 10 years, he meets this woman from Detroit who comes to Milwaukee to invest in property due to a situation that her husband was killed by the mob. Her uncle lived in Milwaukee, and she ends up having to sell everything there for her protection to come to Milwaukee. And the differences that he saw in her was the first time he ever stepped out on his wife. And some of her problems followed her, and it was very bad to the point where his wife could have been killed. That actually is, like, the best-selling book that I have. Even right now today, it still outsells everything.
Wow. And you have little books out already, don't you?
Yeah, I just released number 10.
Oh, wow. I was thinking
the book that I – that was the one I sent to you.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about that one.
That story is called Cricket and Honey, The Right to Remain Silent. Again, it takes off in Detroit. Young female police officer working undercover in Detroit. Her job was to infiltrate a group called the Crowder Boys. The Crowder Boys were bigger than the YBI, bigger than the Chamber Brothers. They were some real big-time drug dealers, and she had to go in and play as his girlfriend, which the leader started to fall for her, and he started to let everything go that wasn't positive in his life as far as on the female side. So she wouldn't have sex with him, but, you know, she slept with him and did various things to play the role until he crossed the line and wanted to marry her. She had to blow the whistle and get him indicted. Her partner, Honey, is from L.A. These girls are not partners yet, but Honey is from Los Angeles. She goes undercover to bust a record company CEO who is murdering his ex as they talent climbs and they grow to release number one records. He mostly finds talent from the street, you know, people who were less fortunate but had a great talent that he could manifest. And then he would have them murdered. Her job was to go undercover and just to get information on him. Well, she goes in with a demo. Her superiors didn't know she can actually sing. So she went in with a demo. She ends up getting a contract. She ends up signing. Some things happen, and she gets to the point where she has to defend herself. I don't want to give too much of that one away because it's brand new, but it's I feel it's one of the best books I ever wrote. The storyline, the plot, I think it's very, very good.
And what made you want to become an author?
Well, I wrote the first, I wrote a story called Time Out for Justice. I was doing 6 months in jail, and I decided to write this story. And I wrote it all by hand, and it was so crazy that everybody wanted to read it. It had got so good that the guards would come to my cell every day and say, "Hey, did you write any more? Did you write any more?" And it was like actually reading this chicken scratch. So I knew sooner or later I probably would pursue the idea of really writing a book.
Right.
So that was one of the things that kind of pushed me to doing that.
Right. And so now we're getting the real scoop. You did some time in jail. What did you do?
At that time, well, so long ago, we're talking 97. I think at that time I did have a drug trafficking case.
Okay. Yeah, doing time is not a good thing. You know, we all know about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was in early 90s, you know, that was a lot of young men in my area, in my era, you know, they saw, you know, we saw the guy who was the man. And, you know, we, in my time, the man, we grew up, everybody who grew up in my area, we grew up with the man. We rubbed shoulders with the man. And the man who was the man then was 1 week, you know, catching a bus, and a week later he got 2 Cadillacs and a Jimmy truck. Well, at 16, 17 years old in the late 80s and 90s, that was a real big thing to see. You know, we knew who LL Cool J and Run DMC was, but they were fantasy when you had the man right there on your block.
Right. And during that time, what city were you in?
I was in Milwaukee.
Okay. Yeah, well, we know, you know, the 80s and 90s were big with, I mean, heroin was even before that, but we know that, you know, that was the big crack epidemic in the 80s and 90s. And so I think a lot, you know, so many people got kind of caught up in that. If, you know, not using it, for sure selling it, or, you know, somehow getting caught up in it.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, the money was there. It was real great money, you know. $1,000 back then, it's not what $1,000 is now, but I mean, geez, if you were 17 when I was 17, you had $1,000, you had $1 million.
Right.
You know, and a lot of guys who choose to live that career now, they, you know, they don't even understand the value of a dollar, you know, let alone trying to earn it the illegal way. You know, they
right.
Every dime, you know, you see the guys now, every dime they get, they, you know, they want to buy a car, they want to do some things with it, they want to do some flamboyant things that says, "Hey, I am a drug dealer."
Right. Or, you know, at least, and I think a lot of young men at that age, you know, they sell the drugs because they do want to appear like they're somebody. They do want to have the nice car, the nice clothes, the nice shoes, the nice jewelry. You know, and I think a lot of people just get caught up in that, not even realizing, you know, to what degree and what level that's going to take them to.
Well, it gives a person who doesn't know any better a sense of power. If you have an entourage of 10 guys and here you come and you sit down and nobody has anything, but you have an ounce of dope, and we know by the time we sell this, if we sell it dollar for dollar, we're going to get $2,800. That's a lot. That's a sense of power. Now you're talking to guys who can barely buy a hamburger. You're going to become their idol. I mean, of course, they're going to always idolize Michael Jordan and Dr. J, but those are their fantasy idols. Here you are. That $2,800 that we could all make is bigger than Michael Jordan's millions. It's a sense of power.
Right. Well, I'm going to hand the phone over to somebody that would know way better than me, and that is Boys.
Hey, what's up, my brother? Yeah, I just was listening, you know, and that's correct, you know, about how these young cats want to idolize drug dealers, but in the end, that's a losing game. You know, you
it's might a losing make a battle.
Million. You make a million Monday. You know what I mean? Tuesday, you straight broke with a case. You know,
you straight broke, and they don't see the vicious cycle. They don't see the that it's just a crazy way that the system sets you up once you're in it. I had a partner the other day. He's out now, but you know, 25 days ago. I call him, and his kid's like, oh, dad's gone again. He's picking, well, what is he in jail for? The police raided the house. They found a gun that he had just bought this house probably 30 days before they did this, and it happened to be a old antique gun in the attic that belonged to the people before. Luckily, his parole officer did all the necessary work to find out, but they came in there for drugs. And the people just don't see that it's a vicious cycle. We called a lawyer. The first thing the lawyer says, I want $35,000. He's facing 20 years. So lawyers are trained to say, you know what? You're a drug dealer. You got a shoebox full of money somewhere. I want it all. I want it all. And when we out there hustling, we don't even look at that part of it. Not many even put up money for a rainy day. We don't even value the concept of our freedom. It's just we're just going, going, and going until we're gone.
Right. That's just going to show you that, you know. And, you know, I've never glorified the drug life. You know what I mean? I've been in the drug life since I was 10 years old, you know. But I never glorified the life I was living. But at the same time, you know, I was schooled by some of the old D-cats, you know what I mean, back in the day. And if you really schooled by the right people, you know off the top when you out there hustling, the first thing you need on your team is a lawyer and a bondsman, and that's the first two people you get on your crew, you know? So,
absolutely.
You got a lot of people out here that just want to pick up a pack of dope and think that's what's happening, but when them people come, the first thing you do, either if you married or got a girlfriend, the first thing you do is call them, and they looking at you, well, where your money at? You know what I mean? You the one out there selling dope, and you calling me talking about put up the house, you know? So to all you want to be drug dealers straight from me, you know what I mean, go to McDonald's and get your job, man, or get on Facebook and ask somebody how to make your PayPal account and do something legal, you know what I mean, and do a legal hustle because in this era of time, you ain't making no millions of dollars, bruh. You know what I mean? You just setting yourself up for a penitentiary cell in a graveyard. And that's the bottom line.
Oh, yeah. We say in my hood, if you're selling dope, you got a court date. It's mandatory. You got a mandatory court date. You might not know when it is, but you got a court date.
Right.
Or so,
you got the graveyard. You might not make the court date. You might have a straight-up funeral, or they might not even find your body. It depends on what clique you're dealing with. So
and that's absolutely true.
You know, cats got to be aware of it, man. The drug game is a dead end. It's washed up. It's over with. This ain't the 80s and 90s where you're going to make $3 or $4 million a day or you're going to make $1 million a week. All that's over with, man. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah, that's
the feds, the DEA, the CIA, the Jack boys, the robbery boys, your homeboy sitting next to you, he working with the feds. So you ain't going to never win in that game, man. That game is dead and over with, you know?
Yeah, it's so far gone and so far overrated that it's ridiculous. But, see, where we losing it at is it's a thin line between a person understanding how to be responsible versus the unresponsibility. You know, if I'm a very unresponsible person throughout life, it's easy for me to be that way. To make that change, to make that transition, to become a responsible person, it takes a lot because responsible people go to work. Responsible people pay their bills on time. Responsible people take care of their family. Unresponsible people have no means of none of that. None of that means nothing to them. It's okay, the light bill is due, I get it when I get it. You know, it's not like, okay, we do now, they're going to cut it off in 2 days if it ain't due. I get it when I get it. And to make that transition, yeah, you know, I'm going to get out here and grind. I'm going to do that. And, you know, and we need to, I always say, you know, if we want to change, somewhere we got to draw the line. We got to say, okay, we're going to take all these kids that's in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade and try to program them. We can't keep chasing these 9th, 10th, and 11th, and 12th graders because they some of them are just too far gone. So,
right. And my
when
motto,
go ahead,
child. My motto was one thing, man. I help those who want to be helped, and I pray for those who still lost, you know, because I'd rather for my attention to be focused on the man or young woman that's ready for the change, that's ready to get directed in the right way, that's ready to go out here and be successful in life. And the ones that's still tripping, I tell them, I pray for you that one day before it's too late that you learn that life out there is nothing, you know, and I keep it moving. That's just how I roll.
Yeah, you gotta roll like that. You gotta roll like that. I remember one day, this was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, was two of my good friends, it was their anniversary. So we couple up and we go over to Chicago. I get a presidential suite at the Conrad, one of my buddies get a presidential suite at the Conrad, my other buddy staying downstairs. He hustling good still right now at that time. He the man, he the bird man. So we go out to eat. The bill like $1,600. I pay $1,400. Had him put $100, had the other guy put $100. That morning when we get up, we go out and party. Now I'm buying drinks. I'm spending money like I'm balling. That morning when I get up, we got joining rooms. So I knock on his door. He opened the door. We standing and looking out over downtown Chicago. He's smoking a big $150 cigar. I'm like, man, you got a 750 credit score, got your little transportation business going, and you got plenty of money. Why don't you quit? He looked at me and told me, if I quit, my nephews can't eat. It was about 6 months later, he got indicted. But these are the things. You know, it's crazy that even some people in power, they get so entrenched in the game that they're not even budging when they got a way out. And it's a sickness. And people don't understand selling drugs is just addictive as using drugs. You become addicted to that lifestyle. You have to have that lifestyle. You know, why do you think that there's people, cartel families, they got enough money to never sell drugs again, but they won't quit. They don't quit until they get busted because it's not even the money anymore. You're not even doing it for the money when you get to that level.
It's a lot of the money.
Power and control also.
It's power. It's people know what you're doing. You the man.
Right.
You know, if some people so brave, you get some movie stars, some basketball players, some football players that you see. Those are sad stories when you see a NBA player getting caught with 10 kilos of cocaine. It looks bad to the community for one. And why is this millionaire doing this?
Right. And he don't got to do nothing but educate the kids and give back to his community where he done come from for somebody else to do something for somebody else. It's just a blessing passing the blessing. But a lot of these cats don't realize that, man. You know what I mean? And while we're on the air tonight, I just want to take a few minutes out to give a big shout-out to Trayvon Martin's family and the Streets Don't Love You Back movement. We send our prayers out to his family and that this situation will be under control very soon. And we also want to say to everybody across the country, while we rallying, we also need to rally for the youth and others that's in our city, wherever you live, in your community, about all the injustice that's taking place in your community as well. So while we all out here promoting and rallying for injustice that is happening to our people, let's also take this moment to do an injustice. That's what's happening in our own community, whatever state you live in, you know, and send a powerful message out to not just the police officers, but to our Congress people, to our senators, and to the Capitol, and to everybody that we are not taking this anymore, you know. So let's make this picture big, you know what I mean, because it's a very big picture because it's so much has been pushed up under the rug with all these different killings that's going on across the country, you know. So let's all stand up and rally for everything and all things, you know. So I just wanted to send that out there, and we just wanted to send much love and respect out to Mr. Martin's family as well at their time of loss and grief.
Man, my thing is, yeah, my prayers do go out, definitely go out to that young man's family. That's a tough loss. I lost a young brother before the age of 21. But my thing is that the police been killing niggas for years. This ain't new. Now that we got social media, social networking, we got Facebook, we got Twitter, there's so many people that's posting on this that don't even really care. And the proof of that will be in the pudding very soon. It's the wave to ride right now. I mean, in my city, you know, the police jumped and beat this boy up, Frank Jewel. He got $1 million. Everybody want to talk about the money he got now, not the incident. You don't even hear about Rodney King no more. You don't hear about his beating here, how stupid he was when he got the money from getting whooped. It's just, I mean, back in the day, back in the early 80s when I was a young teenager, the police killed a guy named Ernest Lacey. Got him in the back of the paddy wagon, stepped on his neck until he died. Those same police officers, it was a big rally, big rally. Those same police officers end up getting better paying jobs out at the House of Correction. One of the police officers became a captain. He was so corrupt, he was stealing all the money out the soda machines in the House of Correction, thousands and thousands of dollars, after he shouldn't even had a job. We rally to do what? To stop, to say, okay, I gave my pitch about Trayvon Martin, I gave my pitch about Frank Jude, I gave my pitch about Ernest Lacey. It's not a real movement. At least when Rodney King got jumped, they rallied. See, they tore Cali up. It wasn't no ifs, and buts about it. They tore it up. Like, we ain't standing for this. Y'all gonna change what's going on here. We ain't standing for this.
And that's the reason, child, that I put that out there today, you know what I mean? And I don't know if you've seen the post I put out there, but, you know, I'm letting everybody know that it's a lot of injust that's happening in your own city that nobody has spoke about, you know? So while we are rallying, we need to speak about all the injust that's going on in every community across the country, because just last week, a young baby got killed in Detroit, Michigan, in my hometown. 37 bullets went in this house, and one hit the young kid. You know what I mean? The kid wasn't even a year old. You know what I mean? No one heard of that one. You feel what I'm saying? So we have to not jump on the bandwagon when the media is out there. We have to jump on the bandwagon right there in our own neighborhood to let the police and everybody know that we are not going for this injustice happening right here in our own city. And we also is up to rally about what's happening in other cities as well. So all these movements and all these people need to connect from all across the country in every state, and this has to be an ongoing thing, not just when the media die down, you die down. This is your community, because when the media die down, that's still your community where you live at. So you have
Absolutely.
To still be a voice in your own community. And that is what I'm pushing to people now. You know what I mean? Since the media, okay, we got the media's attention. Okay, we got People Magazine's attention. Okay, all that's fine and well. But when all this go to the side, is you still going to be out there rallying for the injustice going on in your community day in and day out? That's the bottom line, you know? Because the rallying ain't just for one day. Yes,
the
rallying ain't just for one day. Rallying ain't just for one individual. This is a global thing. This is a global injustice going on. And can't nobody across America tell me that there's no injustice going on in your community, and it's going on right now while we're on the radio show. It's injustice going on all over the country. So let's not
all over the world. Over the whole world.
Yeah,
I was just reading an article about this guy over in Africa who's killing these kids, and ain't nobody doing nothing about it. I forget his name, but I posted the video from YouTube. It's like crazy. So it's all over the world. It's
Amen.
All over the world. And how are we gonna do something about it if, okay, this man Bill Facebook, and you know, I get on here and I see 30 pictures of a girl in her bathroom mirror with her cell phone taking pictures.
Right.
That's what it's all about for, you know, 25 million of the 50 million that's on there. You
Amen.
Know, so the movement, Is it really a movement, or is it just a bunch of hydroponic people not even really knowing what this is about, what it's doing to us? You know what I'm saying? Facebook is great, but it's also a lot of people's downfall.
Amen.
You know, and all those social network media systems, it's the same thing. It's the same thing, you know. Why is it, you know, it's free. It's free.
When you connect
50 million people for free, you're going to have some drama. The last two crimes before I left my city, the police said it was Facebook-driven. Communication on Facebook is how these people found each other, and in each one of them crimes, somebody lost their life this year.
Amen.
This year.
You know?
Inboxing, posting, and all that stuff on Facebook.
Right.
So they put this out here. Man, if we can't get together without a server, how you think we're going to get together with a server?
Right. And that's where people need to realize, too, that you don't need to air your dirty laundry out and, you know, for the whole wide world to see. Do your networking. Take care of your business, you know, and post things that, you know, the news and forward things that you think are important. You know, everybody, you know, pictures, positive quote, things like that. But cut the bullshit. Cut the naked photos. Cut the, you know, talking about each other. And just do your serious networking. You know, that's
you know
what it's for.
You know what it reminds me of? You ever remember the movie Trading Places?
Yes.
When Mortimer and them, when they went in the bathroom and they didn't know Eddie Murphy was in the toilet. And they made that bet. They made that bet that he was going to fail. Like, these two millionaires made this bet, $5 bet.
Right.
That he was going to fail.
Right.
And it's like, it's got to be somebody behind all this stuff. They just like, okay, well, we ain't going to pull a plug on this because this is doing what the corrupt police needed to do.
Right.
This is doing what the corrupt system needed to do. Okay, you're going to get 10 million people networking, but you're going to get 40 million people not networking. And that's cool.
Right. You know, and you can, like us, we post so many important things out here to people. And granted, you know, you only have 5,000 friends at the most, so you're really not getting it to a whole lot of people. But, you know, we post some very informative information out here, and most of the time nobody says a darn thing about it. You know?
They won't.
No.
They won't. So, they won't say nothing about it. But if you post on there right now, boy just blacked your eye, you're going to get 2,000 responses like, oh, what happened? What happened?
Exactly. That's because they want to be known.
I guarantee you.
They don't want to do anything about it.
Right.
Right.
I tell people all the time, you know, and I watch people on my page. You know, I have little entertainers on my page that rap, and, you know, they cuss and they swear and they're talking about their weed consumption. And, you know, I send them inboxes. Hey. You don't ever know who watching you. What if Puffy watching your page? What if P. Diddy watching your page heard you and thought about signing? You lost the battle already. You know, I tell them, your page is your stage. Why not keep it clean?
That's right.
You know,
well, whatever you do reflects the kind of person you are. You know, whether it's how you dress, how you carry yourself, what you put on your Facebook account, what you put on your MySpace account, you know. So it's kind of like, tell me who you hang around and I'll tell you who your friends are. Or I'll tell
you
about
you. Stupid. A girl put on her page, I played hooky from work today because I wanted to go shopping. She got fired the next day. Are you that shallow? Are you that dense?
Well, there's a cop down in Louisiana yesterday got taken off duty because he made a comment about Trayvon's situation. He said, you know, if you're going to act like a thug or look like a thug, then you're going to get killed like a thug or something like that. So they actually took him off duty, which I thought was great because he didn't need to put that post on Facebook. That was not called for.
Yeah, he lucky all he got was took off duty. They understand, see, what they wanted to do was they wanted to stop the repercussions of that statement in his, you know, in his area. They could have called for some National Guard protection if the people would really be standing on what they act like they want to claim like they standing on.
Right. Right, definitely. You know, we do have several people in our chat room. We want to welcome you all and thank you for listening in. Thank you for those. We do have a couple of questions that I'll get to here in a minute regarding your books and such. We do have a few calls. So we're going to go ahead and take a caller right now. And this call is last four digits, 5688. Caller, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you. How are you? This is Mercy in Atlanta. I just wanted to add to your conversation by suggesting this. You know what the sad thing is, some of my non-African-American friends brought me to the awareness of. They said that, you know, your culture is so weak in the men department that when stuff like this Trayvon stuff happens or anything happens in your community, you guys don't mobilize and organize because the women are more powerful than you guys are. And I sat and thought about it. I said, yeah, that could be true, could not be true. And they said, well, look in every other culture, Asian, Pakistani, whatever the case may be. Things like this don't exist because the power is in the money. You guys, you'll make it rain in the club, but like with this Trayvon thing, you won't go give the same 10 G's you burnt in a little strip club to the Trayvon case to help them hire a private investigator and get more information to hang everybody. You guys won't collectively do that. And one of my Egyptian friends said, look at all these people out that came to march and do the hoodie thing. What if they all gave $5 to the cop?
Well, let me ask you something real quick, Murph, not to cut you off. You know how they invented the copper penny? I mean, do you know how they invented the copper wire?
No, sir.
No.
It was two Jews fighting over a penny. That's a joke. But to say that, to say, we do things for what's called the WIFM. And the WIFM is, what's in it for me? Okay, now, I'm a black man. I got some money. I got a little bit of power. I'm going to go give Trayvon Martin mama 10 G's. I need to know where that's going to benefit me. If it don't benefit me right now, I'm looking at a year from now, like, okay, I can bring this back up. That's our problem. That's our problem. We always look for...
I was about to get to that point. I was going to make that point that the sad paradigm is that all those other cultures, they do those things for the sense of longevity and what the future is going to bring for the collective. And while we, unfortunately, and I think basically because the manpower is so weak, while we unfortunately do stuff for the little limited time, even some of the make it rain moves that we do, you know, wearing the chains or the cars or what have you, some cats, like you guys made the mention of earlier, they don't even understand how to invest in themselves. When I was out doing dirt in California, me and my friend, we were 16, we had 60 G's. And I said, you know what, man, let's open up a studio and do something. See, I'm trying to think, take it to the next level. My man was like, nah, dude, you know, do-do-do-do-do. The very next day, he got busted and everything got took. So it's that type of philosophy that cats got to break out of, and you guys are very right to say that. I just wanted to kind of salute you on that and also throw that other thing in there what my non-black friend has said, because I think it's real valid. We got too many people like you gentlemen who know what the problem is, but we got too many cats who are doing halfway decent, okay, and doing well, who are scared to invest in protecting themselves by investing in another person. And that's all I want to say.
That's a good comment, man. That's a good comment.
It's definitely a great comment. And that, you know, a lot of these young men, you know, they need to, okay, if you need to sell drugs to get on your feet or whatever, if you have to, I'm not saying it's right, but do what you got to do. Put your money aside and invest it in something that you can start your own business or do something different and get away from selling the drugs so that you don't get put in jail, taken away from your family, your children, your parents, you know.
But that's just it, though. That's just it, though, Lucinda. You can't tell a crackhead, okay, if you want to just get high for a month, smoke these rocks for 30 days. But after 30 days, I think you should try to wean yourself off. It's an addiction.
Right.
Selling is an addiction just like using. So it's no way that I'm going to start off with this little 8-ball, and in 1 week I got me a 9-piece. Now I done went from having $100 to $7,000. Now I'm going to a bird. I got $28,000. Back then I can only buy a pair of Air Force Ones. Now I can go buy me a pair of Murrays, two, three pair of Murrays, And I got all the women looking at me in the club. She ain't looking at the eight ball guy over there no more. She looking at me. She looking at me because I got the money now. So you can't, it's no way. You just can't do it, period. You just got to, one, you can't even let yourself get caught up in that lifestyle. It's a lifestyle. It's like a diet. A diet, be, if you really want to lose weight and keep the weight off, your diet has to become a way of life. And that's the same way with selling drugs. It's going to become a way of life for you. You can't tell a millionaire that now you can't go from, okay, I'm a millionaire to a thousandaire. That ain't going to happen. That just ain't going to happen. I mean, people kill themselves for that stuff. People lose their money. People hang themselves, kill themselves, jump off the bridge, jump off a building, stand in the street in front of a truck because they broke.
Right.
I mean, once they had that taste, if you've been broke, then you are right. But once you done had that taste of that life, you know, Mike Tyson and Ali shooting dice.
Now, I will say this. It does take, I notice it does take people in general, but men more so. It takes them a little while to get a clue because, yeah, all those elements do come into play, and the more money you have, the less you are to be responsible or forward-thinking for a lot of people. But I think the solution really is we have to have more. I really am proud of what ladies do for ladies. Ladies have all these different groups for exclusively ladies. And many times when you try to just be a part of a certain group, ladies will tell you, oh, no, this is for ladies only. But the sad thing is there's not too much for the guy who wants to change his stripes and do something different. So while what you're saying is true, he got all these elements going on, and if I come and tell him, hey, dude, take that 10 G's and do something else with it, it ain't like he got 14 other places to go get that mindset from. You know what I'm saying? So it's really a sad thing on that end for a lot of guys, but that's my solution. We just need
I tell you what kind of happens, and it happens more now in the 90s and in the new era than it was back in the 80s. Men are turned loose a lot earlier than women. You turn your boy loose at 13, 14, because you say, you got to go out there and be a man. You going out there, you know, you're not turning them loose just to go sell drugs, but you're turning them out loose to be a man. His curfew changes now. You know, back in the day, curfew was 6, 7 o'clock, didn't matter. 13, 14, 15, 16. Now your curfew change at 13, 14 year olds out there to 9, 10, 11 o'clock. Women don't, it's still not like that for women. You know, at 13, mom and daddy looking for that little girl at 6 o'clock when the lights get dark. Girls are always going to be more pampered, so they got a chance to mature in the household. They got a chance to be around mama. They learning some women responsibilities. They learning how to cook because that's what they want to do. They want to be around mama. They want to learn how to cook. They want to learn how to do their hair. They want to learn how to do nails when they 13, 14, 15, preparing for high school to be the cutest thing in high school. But, you know, men, we start in 7th and 8th grade. We start, you know, we get a little pubic hair. We get past puberty, and we become strong. And we have our own beliefs, you know, earlier than the female species do. And we have egos, and our egos are starting earlier and earlier. So it's posing a problem where we don't even want to listen to our parents no more at a certain age, a younger certain age than before.
But you know,
and it doesn't help that the parents are becoming younger.
Haven't you noticed, though, outside of America, the opposite is true? For the most successful cultures, like Japanese, they hug their boys longer and they put their girls out quicker.
Yeah. Here's what happened. I'm going to tell you my belief in that. Other cultures do things from the beginning. If you start something from the beginning and you keep it that way from the beginning, that's the way it is. You know, Charlie Manson, as crazy as he is, he said, if you give a baby a book of matches and you keep striking this match for this baby and playing a song in the background, baby, won't you light my fire, you just birthed a pyromaniac. ain't nothing you're going to be able to do. This baby's going to grow up to be a pyromaniac. So when you start something from the beginning, other cultures, when them babies are born, Them babies is going to school earlier. Them they going to school more times, longer throughout the years. And this is the way the culture is. Our culture doesn't do that. Our culture don't even. The parents ain't even in the schools no more. The parents ain't even going to schools because the parents have to work. You know, the parents have to work. You know, I'm not defending that, but the parents have to work. So, you know, you get kicked out of school. I done heard plenty of parents tell their kids, you done got yourself kicked out. You need to get yourself back in. I got to go to work. You know, back when I was in fourth and fifth grade, we was getting our ass whooped in school in front of everybody to make us not want to get in trouble no more.
That's right.
The kids now had the power to call 911 on their parents.
Right.
So you go up to a school and try to do something to your kid call the police on you, and you going to jail.
Right.
Not, and the kids are so stupid, they don't even realize, where am I going now that my mommy in jail or my daddy in jail? They don't teach the kid that.
There is one of the biggest reasons we have such lack of respect in our world today is because the parents are not allowed to chastise their children like our parents did, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I stayed rooted longer. I was in public school. I think I went to private school for maybe 1 year, but I mostly did my stint in public school. But in fifth and sixth grade, in a public school, my teacher whooped your ass. She wasn't getting suspended. She wouldn't, and this was in a public school. And call your mama.
No,
but,
mom or dad,
but after she got through talking to after she got through talking to your mama, she made your mama realize, I could whoop his ass for what he did wrong and sit him over there in that chair and make sure he still get his lesson, or I can send him home to you for 3 days, because that's what the system really want. They want him. They say he a problem. So they want him out of here for 72 hours to see if you can resolve the problem at home. Now you got to miss work. You got to make other arrangements. So my mama said, whoop his ass.
That's right. But we lost our caller that we had on the line, but we do have some more calls. We have some a lot of people in the chat room, a lot of great comments. One of the comments is we must restore the sense of personal responsibility and community love for each other to correct this. So there's a lot of chatting going on. You know, everybody's agreeing and let's go ahead and take another caller here. We're going to go to the last four digits, 1015. Caller, you're on the air.
Good evening, host. Good evening, Charles. This is Rhea.
Good evening. Hey, Rhea.
Hey.
Welcome to the show.
Two things I wanted to say. First of all, people need to recognize that companies have now hired people who full-time jobs is to monitor Facebook and these different social networks and entities in a lot of these major companies. So they know what you put out there right after you've done it. Whether they acknowledge it or say something about it or not, they're keeping record of it. And majority, especially when it comes to these Fortune 500 companies and things such as that, because they're now feeling that they get your real personality off of your Facebook page. So that person who you accepted as a friend that you may not know could easily be somebody from your own company that is monitoring what you do. And most people are still act like they don't understand that, but yes, they do. And number two, Charles, where did you come from with okay, what you said was the way I came up, but nowadays a lot of that don't exist anymore. You have a whole lot of people who don't monitor their daughter. They don't monitor at all. Now, I think part of it is because people are working. And it sometimes, okay, I put it like this. You have a lot more parents putting their heads in the sand than you used to have, okay? But if you take the population of females, 75% of them don't want to be in the kitchen. Don't even know how to cook nowadays. That's almost a dying art.
Well, it's definitely changing. It's definitely changing, but it's still not as lopsided as with boys. But yes, it's definitely changing because the world is changing. You know, our girls are now seeing Nicki Minaj. They're seeing Lil' Kim. They're seeing all this. You know, back when I was coming up, we had Salt and Pepper. It was, you know, Push It was the most volatile thing you can really see on TV. You know, so it's definitely changing. The girls are getting younger. Anytime you in that cycle, anytime you're in a cycle is just going 360 degrees. So it's going to come around. It's going to come around. It's going to come around. And this is what we're going to have to deal with right now is the change in what our kids are seeing. You know, I got three daughters. They all three princesses, but I got one prince that's just, she just chasing the frog. And I got two other ones that's just living in the castle and doing it the right way. You know, I'm at ends with because I don't know what to do. It's like, man, what do you do? You try to do everything you can. You got sisters that's, you know, in music, playing instruments, making videos. You got a 10-year-old sister that's speaking two different languages, asking me for my editor number because she's preparing her book for publishing, and this is what you want to do. So, it's, you know, you get caught in a catch-22 from these things with these children. But, you know, you guys have to do your best you can to get them to 18, men and women.
Amen. You know, and I agree with that, man, because you got so many parents out here, and like the young lady said, you know, some of it is that parents work, but you got a lot of people out here nowadays that tell their children, and I was over somebody's house a while back, and it blew me away, you know, when they left out the house. They told their kid, they said, oh, yeah, and don't forget to bring your mama back a joint and a 40. I'm looking like, is this just serious? You know what I mean? Coming up in our day, you couldn't even say that in your parents' house. You feel me? You didn't even want your parents to know you did anything because you know if they found out you was going to get your ass whooped, you know?
Yeah, so, the parents are getting younger now. You know, the parents are getting younger. It's cool to get a girl knocked up at 16, 17. It's cool. You know, it's cool to be... I'm a BD at 16. That's my BM.
Right.
You know, that's cool to people now. And, you know, I don't understand that. You know, like you were saying, though, when we was growing up, it didn't matter if your parents had to work. You didn't even go to the door. Your ass sat there watching Inspector Gadget, did your homework, put something in the microwave, and went to bed, did your homework with the bed. Because you was afraid of that whooping. You was afraid of that whooping.
You
know, there's nothing
to
threaten these kids no more. Parents can't threaten these kids no more.
Well, no,
you can't threaten them because they got the power to call the police on you.
Right.
That's
deep. And I think that's, Charles, when the game got broke down. That's when parenthood got broke down. And that's when a lot of parents that's out here trying to do right by their child, that broke the whole system down when they came with that right there. And a lot of kids use that, you know what I mean, to their advantage, especially when they know their ass is wrong. They'll hurry up and call 911, but what they fail to realize, mom and dad in jail, your ass going to somebody's jailhouse too. You ain't finna just be out here kicking.
Right.
You know?
They don't get that part explained to them. Yeah. If you was born before 1983, you can't tell me you didn't hear the slogan, I bought your ass in this world, I'll take you out. That slogan gone.
Okay.
Well,
hey, Sal, we got another caller.
Maybe that's just part of who I am, and I'm old school to the heart. But when one of mine thought they were going to call, because I raised three boys and one girl by myself, and when one of mine thought they was going to call on me, I went in the room, put on my slip-on gym shoes and the jogging shoes, because when the police got there, all our ass was going to jail, because they wasn't leaving them in my house.
I ain't mad at you, sister.
Just like they say, but you can't do that. We'll arrest you. But then you can take all our ass out of here because he can't stay here. Because I remember my mama told the police, when my brother called, only one in our family ever tried that. My mama looked in that policeman's face and said, go around the corner. And he said, what do you mean? She said, you don't need to go nowhere in the corner because you leave him here. I'm killing the little motherfucker. She said it just like that. And it was two cops. It was a black cop and a white cop. The white cop got all huffy and got up in my mother's face. The black cop said, man, let's go. And he's looking at man, let's go. And he grabbed him and he took him out the house. And they sat in front of our house for about 30 minutes. They heard my brother getting his butt whooped. I bet you he never called on nobody else.
I mean,
at some point you got to take, you have to take. I'm not going to say that, okay, I'll put it like this. I had a healthy fear of my mother, okay? Children nowadays don't have that healthy fear. Well, you know what? Matt thought I was crazy, so I guess they had it. That's why right now I'm sitting on one that graduated in December with his bachelor's in business administration. I'm sitting on an electrical engineer who graduated in May that's working for Corning. A daughter that works at Northwestern, making double the amount of money that I make, and a senior getting ready to come out of the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana. Bottom line is, have to be parents. We can't be their friends. We can't be their friends. We are not their equal.
And on that note, we're going to you stay on the line, and we're going to go to this next caller. You stay right on the line, because we're going to come right back to you.
Okay.
All right, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
How you doing, Carla?
Hi, this is Cynthia. How you doing?
Oh, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm doing very great. I just had a couple of comments. One thing I did want to say is I think that a lot of times what happens with girls is that they don't get validation at home. You know, they don't get validation at home. And when a child isn't getting validated at home, they go to the streets to get validation. It's sad, but it's true. So I really agree with it. The comment that was in the chat room about a lot of parents buying their children are putting the price of their love on price tags and in name brand clothes, and that's actually not what makes a child. But I didn't call for that. I actually called because I had a couple of questions that I wanted to ask Mr. Burgess.
Come on, Arthur Van Rare Form. Come on in Rare Form.
Bring it on.
Okay, so I have about four questions I want to ask in order. So the first question I want to ask is, just in doing a little research and different things like that, I noticed that you lived a fast life at one time. Am I on target with that?
Very so.
Okay.
Millionaire status, balling, doing the seat walk. I was doing it all.
Okay. So you decided to settle down and write books, am I right?
Correct.
Okay, so do you use your information, from the streets to write your books, correct?
Somewhat. Sometimes. Somewhat. I think, you know, my street, I have a book that's finished now called Cocaine Castle. We're gonna get some balling in there. Bewildered was about a retired drug dealer who the feds wanted to reset up, who was no longer in the life. They heard him talking about seven keys. He talking about buying seven buildings for seven choice schools. So I do everything, I guess every story I write has a little bit of me in it some way. Even though it's fiction, I have to, you know, because I write freely. I don't research. I don't use the computer to research characters. Most I might research if I'm talking about Detroit. I want to talk about what's at Belle Isle or what's out 7 Mile, 8 Mile, Joy Road, Finkel. If I want to get into them streets and all that, I want to make that seem real in case a person from Detroit read the book. So, but character-wise, I don't research. Everything flows from my head.
My man.
Okay, so with that being said, I just wanted to say I actually was reading your book, Cricket and Honey.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved the book. But what I did find out, because I automatically think a lot of times people tag people as just urban fiction writers, and that's not true. And doing a little research and reading some of your books, I found out that you actually have a message that most of the people in your books that they're heroes. They're either out of the life or getting out of the life. So are you actually kind of writing to encourage people to get out of the life?
Well, my thing is, I say this. I have a saying. I say following a great leader doesn't make you a follower. It puts you in position to be the next great leader. It's one of my slogans. And I read everybody, but I model some of my writing after the person who I really like, which is like James Patterson. So my stories tell a story to a certain extent that I don't want to be. I'll never knock the genre urban fiction. I'm classified as an urban fiction author. But when you go into a search engine and type in different type of genres, I want my name to be able to pop up in that too. I want to come up in all search engines. So I can't write just glamorized, and I don't have a book. Even Cocaine Castle, I mean, the guys were selling drugs like crazy, but it's not. It has the means to an end. This kid wanted to be a doctor. The police put drugs on him, took him to jail, and said, if you don't give us six names, we're giving you a case. This was a straight-A student. So while he's sitting in the joint, he like, fuck it. If they want to say I'm a drug dealer, when I get out of here, this is what I'm going to do. And that's what he did, became a drug dealer. And because they messed up his chance with the felony of going to college and becoming and pursuing a PhD. So, yeah, I try to, you know.
Go ahead. That's a very valid point, because a lot of our people are in the wrong place at the wrong time, even like concerning the boy that you guys are speaking on. Well, let me ask you a question, Charles, and I'm going to let somebody else get on, but I want to ask you my four-point question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years, spiritually, financially, personally, and professionally?
Start those over. Spiritually? let's take them one at a time. Spiritually?
Yes.
Still reading John 3:16 and believing in it to the
okay.
day I die.
Okay.
And what was the next one?
Financially.
Financially, one thing I understand is money needs a boss. Money can't be the boss. So wherever I'm at, it'll never boss me.
Okay. And so professionally?
Professionally, I don't even know. I mean, I'm a shake my shoulders off. I don't even know if I can get more professional than I already am. No, just kidding. I always want to keep climbing that level. I do a lot for other authors in the game, other people in whatever game you win. I mean, I was called at the age of 13 an encyclopedia full of worthless information, but now I know that my information is worth something. So professionally, I feel like, you know, if I can make another person successful, I become more successful. So I'm always trying to increase my professional level to help others go on and make people want to be around me, make people want to listen to what I say. You know, I want to be the next E.F. Hutton. You know, when I speak, people listen.
Wow. Okay. And what about personally? Where do you see yourself in your personal life 5 years from now?
I don't know what that entails.
Okay. I'll go for that. Well, I want to tell you that I really enjoy your book, okay?
Thank you. Let me answer that question. I can't leave a question I answered. I see myself somewhere... I see myself somewhere on Gilligan's Island with Mrs. Howell. I want to be sitting back talking about Lovey.
Okay. I hope her name has changed. However, I do really enjoy your books. And tell me something. Why do they call you the storyteller?
Because that's what I do.
Tell stories. Okay. Well, I'm really enjoying your book. I'm enjoying your show, Lucinda, as always. I do want to pay a compliment out to Lucinda while I have you on the phone when we were talking about children, because I happen to know your daughters personally. They're very well-mannered, very honorable, very nicely dressed, extremely good workers, very good values, and you should be very proud of them.
Are you talking about Emily and Melissa? Stop it. No,
yeah.
I'm just kidding.
They're really good girls. Okay. All right. Let me just ask you, Charles, how are you enjoying your visit in Arizona?
Arizona is great. It's hot. I'm in the office right now. If I was in Milwaukee, I would have to have an Eskimo coat. I'm sweating. I got my shoes off, 3 buttons off my shirt open. And
Wow, that was a lot of information. Okay, you have a great night, Charles and Lucinda.
Thank you.
Right, y'all have a great night, too, okay?
Thank you.
All right, good.
And Miss Rhea, did you have anything else to add to all that or ask?
No, I love the questions that she just asked, and especially her four-point question.
All right.
Yeah.
So we got,
what was
we
the four-point question?
5739.
Thank you, Miss Rhea.
Thank you.
All right.
We have another caller on the line. Last four digits, 5729.
You're on the air, caller.
What up, Rob?
Hey, what's up? This is Champ.
Yeah, man, just calling in to support.
Oh, what's up, Champ? Yeah.
How you doing, man?
Yeah, we chilling on the line, Champ. That's the storyteller, the author, you know what I mean, Mr. Child. We just want to take a minute to let everybody know who my man is. That's the next champion of the world right there, you know what I mean, Jesse, you know, Reese. And me and my wife are sponsoring him for his second professional upcoming bout. That's going to be April 21st right here in Phoenix, Arizona, at the Sullivan Theater. So don't miss that, you feel me, because the champ is coming to do his thing. And any thing you would like to ask Mr. Child, Champ?
I just want to know, like, what is he doing? Like, what is he doing now compared to what he used to?
Well, first of all, I know I'm going to start training because I might be 41, but I think I can go. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I'm going to have to come work out with you. But
yeah.
What I'm doing now different, Champ, is living my life, man. I'm living the real life. I'm living what life is about. See, all that
the
other
legit
stuff.
Legit life now or what? You living the legit life now or what?
Yeah, I've been living the legit life since 1998, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I was just telling somebody the other day, you know, as broke as I am, somebody can come say, "Here go 10 kilos," and I tell them, "Get the fuck out of here." I wouldn't even want it. I wouldn't even want to try it. I wouldn't even want to know what that feel like. See, because I feel like this. I feel like God has a place for everybody, and he's going to order your steps. And if you're not doing what he needs you to do, your steps won't be ordered in the way you think they're going to be ordered. So it's just not going to happen. Whatever is meant for you to have, you're going to have it. And you're going to have it by being a responsible, legitimate, righteous person. Because we all know the devil is a lie. The devil is just a lie.
Yeah,
you make everything look good. You make everything look good, you know.
Yeah, man.
You know, when you get in that ring, it's the same thing. When you get in that ring, you don't call to the devil to help you whoop that dude over there. You call to God. You know, like, give me the strength, the power. You know, you ain't trying to kill the dude. You doing it for sports and entertainment, but you calling to God to look over you and the man you fight, that we can make
that's
this
right.
a sports entertainment event, and that's just righteous.
Yeah,
that's right.
And you're staying out of Arizona now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh,
I'm here
nice,
enjoying
man.
Arizona.
Hey, you in Phoenix?
I'm in Phoenix.
We'll have to all get together one of these nights, and I'll go out to dinner and just have a talk or something, you know. For all of our listeners, let me just tell you a little bit really quick about the champ. Young Jesse, young man out of South Central, grew up, his whole family were involved in gangs and drugs. He has some family members locked up right now. He could have been one of them. He also could be dead right now, because not too long ago he should have been in a car where somebody did get shot at, and it was, you know, where he would have been. But he actually that night made the right decision to not go. And he has had some struggles to get away from that life, and his grandfather's helped him through it all and taught him how to box, got him in the gym. And we were introduced to him and asked if we could work with him and help him. And as it ends up, we're now Jesse's sponsors, and Jesse's going to be having his second professional fight here, like Rob said, in April 21st at the Celebrity Theater in Phoenix. There'll be 10 boxing matches that night, and our champ will be one of them. So we're really happy with the good things that Jesse's doing. You know, it's hard to stay away from trouble when your family's all involved, but you know, we know that you're doing the right thing, Jesse, and by you doing the right thing, like we told you, the great things will happen to you.
My advice to Jesse is to stay away from the two D's, the devil and Don King, and you're going to be the champ.
Boy, Don King, man.
Just stay away.
All right.
Everything that glitters ain't gold.
Hey, Charles.
Yeah.
Hey, Charles. Hey, you definitely ain't got to worry about the champ messing with the DK. You feel me? Because, you know, I know the whole history on DK. I used to be around here when I was young, when we used to rock out of
We can go through that whole scenario about that, and you probably be like, the champ probably be like, wow, for real? That's what happened? Yeah, stay away from the two Ds, man, and you're going to stay the champ.
You know, champ got me right there, baby. You know what I'm saying? Me and the missus. So, you know, when it comes to the champ, we definitely a spokesman. You know, if any deal's made, we're going to be right there at the table. You know what I mean?
Making them an offer they can't refuse.
You know how we gonna punch y'all.
Yeah, that's how. See, you come from, and a lot of people don't know that the boxing capital of the world now.
Without a doubt,
Detroit, the boxing. That's where mostly all the professional fighters was. I mean, a lot of people don't know Muhammad Ali stayed in Michigan. He wasn't in Detroit. He was out in Barron Springs, right outside of Benton Harbor, ranch out there. And you know, what's the other boy, Hearns? Wasn't he like a police officer there? And a lot of professional fighters come up out of there, but even most of the professional fighters that didn't come there back in the day, they went there to train.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it was a mega thing back in the day.
With Emmanuel Stewart at the Kung Gym.
Yeah, it was a big thing.
Emmanuel Stewart used to be over all of us coming up when we was younger, you know, but he took more initiative to Tommy because Tommy was tall and had that long reach. But, you know, I want to give a big shout-out to my homeboy Tommy while we talking online. Me and Tommy grew up together and all of that, you know what I mean, at the gym and before we all had went to the gym, you know. So just want to give a big shout out to my boy for having five belts at one time, you know what I mean. So he went up, went down, and he had five belts at one time. So definitely a shout out to my hometown and my homeboy, you know.
That's
cool though. So you got a book now and everything?
Yeah, I got a few of them, champ. I try to write. That's what I try to do, man.
Yeah, I read Rob's book too. Maybe I can get one of yours one of these days.
Absolutely, I'll make sure you get one. I'll make sure you get one of the new ones. I'm actually going to write a book. I'm actually going to write a book about a kid. So maybe I do some research and maybe I interview you because I'm actually going to write a book about a kid who was very much so coming up in an era where he was bullied, and he learns to MMA fight, and he becomes the MMA champ. So once I devise the whole storyline in my head, it'll take me, you know, I write a book in 2 weeks. It's crazy, but yeah, I actually write a book in 2 weeks. So once I had that idea in my mind, because one of my friends is promoting MMA fight now over in Chicago, and that's going very well for them. Lion's King Entertainment. So I was just thinking about that, like, man, I should just write a book about an MMA fighter.
Yeah. Hey, is you gonna be in town to come to the champs fight April 21st, Charles?
Yep. I'm going to Milwaukee April 3rd. I'm gonna go do a book signing for the new release, and I'll probably be going a week, maybe 14 days at the most. So yeah, I'll be back to see the champ fight.
Okay, Yeah, because we want to spread that message, you know what I mean, to everybody that's going to be in Arizona at that time and at that date, you know, to come on out and check out the champ we did April 24th at the Celebrity Theater. He's going to put the game down. He's going to handle his business. And the champ will be speaking with me and my wife at our speaking engagement April 4th also at the Maricopa High School here in our community. I spoke there back in December, and the method was so powerful, they wanted me to come back every semester. So I'm taking a champ with me April 4th, so he can also spread his message to the young youth on how he changed his life around and how his life could have been flipped up, you know what I mean, to the point where, you know, it wouldn't have been no champ, you know. It would have been Gates and
right.
Cousins, you know.
What it could have been. Ten toes up ain't never better than 10 toes down. Maybe we can pay somebody too when I come to the champ fight, because I always wanted to just stand in the center of the ring and say, "Let's get ready to rumble." So I would love to have that accolade under my belt. So maybe we can pay somebody to let me get up there and do that.
We're going to have to have Champ speak to somebody to see if you can get in that ring and say that, homie, you know?
Yeah, I do it a little bit better than that. I really, and then I get some mousse, and I get me a little blonde wig and some mousse, and I get my hair right and black suit, and I do it just like that dude.
Get some Michael Buffer on, huh?
Yeah, I get my Michael. That man make a, they say he make $1 million every time he say that.
Can you believe that?
Who knows, man? There's so much money in boxing. They make $40 million, so I'm pretty sure he's making $1 million every time he says it.
I believe he does it. I mean, a lot of people don't understand. See, this is what I tell people about talent all the time. Manifest your talent, whatever your talent is. There was another guy, a homeless guy, they found in L.A. I mean, the guy was homeless, living in the streets. He had a voice that was so amazing. They found him on the streets at like 9 o'clock in the morning. They had him on the news, the afternoon news. By that night, he had a job calling the Boston game.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So you can't never say where your blessing is at, and you can't never say what God got in store for you, because one day you might be a person that's stressed out about something, and 12 o'clock, you lie to be on top of the world, you know. So we have to understand that God is good all day, every day, and we have to stay focused on what he needs us to do and what he wants us to do. And, you know, I just love that he took me out of that life, and, you know, I'm able to give back to these kids and other people. And, you know, he blessed us to meet Jesse, you know, and then not a chef is another one of the young men that we're helping now with the Streets Don't Love You Back movement. So I'm just blessed to do what I do, and blessed to not be doing life in the penitentiary or dead. So it's a God-given, you know?
Yeah, man, being in Detroit.
Yeah, I thank God for that too, man, because, you know, I met you guys, and then I'm out of jail or anything right now, you know? Like, and I thank God especially because, you know, it took me a long time to stop smoking weed, and now I'm doing greater than I ever have, and I feel like all the part of that, God gave me those blessings right there, you know, with Lucinda and Rob and them in the Streets Don't Love You Back, and
yeah,
I just we got a good team now, you know what I mean?
Don't let nobody trick you, champ. Don't let nobody trick you and tell you it's a natural herb. You don't need it.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Get off of it. Never do it again. Keep your energy up. Keep your training up. You know, I mean, it's whatever it takes to stay the champ. That's the things you have to do. And, you know, you already a champ. You know what I'm saying? Whether you win a belt or not, you already a champ because you overcame so many obstacles that some of the real champs with belts can't even overcome. So you already a champ.
That's what I'm saying, man. I thank God for that because win or lose, I'm just glad I changed my life around, you know?
That's it, bro. You already a champ.
I'm coming to win, though. You know what I mean?
Hey, man, what we coming to do, champ?
Coming to win.
What we coming to do, champ?
Win.
What my man Nelly say? Nelly said, my man Nelly say, he say, what it take to be number one? Number two is not a winner, and three, nobody remembers.
Hey,
win, man.
Yes, sir.
You got to win.
Hey, Charles, we coming on April 21st, homeboy. We are coming to handle that businessman, and the champ is going to do his thing. And like I said, you know, I love that the champ is giving back to help these kids. You know, that's what make me love the champ like I love him. You know, he's giving back to help these kids. He could have said, oh, no, I don't want to come speak at the speaking engagement that you're doing over at the high school. He could have been one of them guys, you know. And then if Champ would have said that, I would have looked at Champ and say, okay then, Champ, well, I see you ain't in the same type of bracket I'm in, you know what I mean? Because we're in the giving back, you know, we're in the helping out.
And sometimes, see, you might get that too, Rob, from some people, you might get that, especially some people that's just on the come up, they just on the rise up. See, people who don't know no better can't do no better. So you can't always be quick to, you know, throw their application away. I put it on the burner,
you know what I mean, to see what that situation is before I proceed any further, you know what I'm saying? But I'm not going to just jump out there because now your application got to sit there and we have to sit at the table and we have to go over this situation of why you don't feel like you should give back to others. You know what I'm saying? And if you tell me that you don't feel you should give back to others, well, then I'm already in heaven then. I'm not sitting at that table with you. You know what I mean? Because regardless of what you're doing in life,
that is your choice. And that is your choice because you're at a plateau where you know what you need to make your motor run. You know what kind of 10W-40 you need to put in there to keep your engine going. But at the same time, a person like take the champ for instance. The champ maybe come up hard. He been in doing all these different things and been involved in this. And here he is. He got a chance to utilize his talent. Well, he wasn't girthed on that talent like right out the gate. It wasn't. He didn't learn like Tiger Woods at 3-4 years old how to swing the golf club. So ever since he was an infant, this was already instilled in him. It just he realized this. But he realizes after being so many years of being in the slumps and nobody never giving him nothing. So why should I? You know, if I hit the lottery tomorrow for $1 million, why should I just give $250,000 to breast cancer? Why should I? You know, we have to be taught why we should. We have to be taught what the fruits is after giving. You know,
amen.
And that's it. And that's what we got to start doing too, because we could be passing up some real powerful people by not bringing them aboard because they think they shouldn't be aboard themselves. Sometimes you got to show people why they should be aboard. This is why you should be aboard. Sometimes you got to trick them even to get them aboard, even if you got to trick them.
That's why the application is not thrown away. That's why it's just sitting on the table till I get to you, and then we'll sit and talk about that. You know what I mean? Because I don't believe in throwing no kid to the streets, because I grew up hardcore. You know what I mean? I started being in the streets at 10 years old until I was almost 30 years old. You know what I mean? In my late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so coming up in the game, you know, I know what it is to be rejected. I know what it is to have a father that was a real millionaire. My father was never no street guy. You know what I mean? My father, you know, got 66 books, wrote it all around the world, in every library, every museum around the country. So I know what it is to be rejected by a man who had it to give me and my mother, but I got caught up in selling drugs, you know what I mean, at a young age to take care of my mother and my brothers and sisters. And, you know, I would look at TV and see my father on TV, and people would say, oh, man, he got the same name you got. I'm sitting there like, yeah, he do, don't he? But, you know, I don't even want to say that's my father. You feel me? For the simple fact, you know, you got your own broadcast for 42 years on TV, your own broadcast on radio for 42 years, and you never gave me and my mother one red dime. So, you know, I definitely know what it is to be rejected, and I definitely know what it is not to have, and I know what it is to have. So that's why, you know, I really work with kids, and I don't believe in throwing a kid to the side, but I do believe in that individual recognize where your weak point at, where you went wrong at, and where you feel you need help at, you know? And once we get to them hurdles, then we know how to help each other, and then we know what to work on, you know? So I definitely stay focused on what I do with these kids out here, you know? And that was a good point that you said. But, yeah, I know what it feels for all that, brother, to be rejected and all of that, you know?
Yeah, you what I call a specialist. You know, I have a thing that I wrote about people listening to the wrong voices. It could play a major part in them making the wrong choices. And I go in detail about a specialist, you know, where we listen to, you know, a guidance counselor or something at school. And your guidance counselor can't really tell you nothing about the streets not loving you back. But Rob Boy could tell you why the streets don't love you back. A guidance counselor could tell you so much, but he can't really get down to the nitty-gritty of somewhere he ain't never been, you know. And that's a big thing in the writing world with a lot of urban fiction writers. We hear about that all the time, like, why you write this? Because it's something I can relate to, and where I came from they can relate to. And, you know, it's crazy.
Right.
So I tell people all the time, you know, you got to listen to the right people, you know.
Correct. It's a young lady that met me one day, Charles, you know, to iterate on what you said. And the way sometimes I dress sometimes, you know, especially when I'm out walking and stuff like that, you know, I don't dress up and fly or nothing like that. And when the lady found out who I was and seen documentaries and read stuff up on my life, she was like, wow. She said, I would never would have known you was that type of guy. You know what I mean? She said, you don't carry yourself like that in no kind of way, shape, or form. She was flabbergasted, you know? But then I had to work it down to her, you know, and then she was like, well, you know, a church, college can't teach what you done went through. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Only a person who have done lived that lifestyle and went down that street can only tell you what go on Galveston Street or 101 Street. You know what I mean? And a lot of people out here in America, you know, it's good to go to college, you know, but college ain't for everybody. You know what I mean? It's good to go to college, and you know, but a lot of people get educated in other areas of life. You know what I mean? And then God bless your testimony to be a blessing and help to others, you know? So that's how I look at life, you know? And I just thank God every day for living and being here and him giving me a second chance or to still reach back and help these kids, you know what I mean? Because I do feel what they feel, and I know where they come from because I was once them, you know what I mean? I was once that angry kid that carried sisters, you know what I mean, that sold mass drugs, you know? I was that angry kid that will beat you down if you said anything crooked. I was that kid that needed a pair of shoes from my father, who was, like I said, a very wealthy man that didn't buy them. You know what I mean? I ended up buying my own stuff all these years. So, you know, when I meet these kids, you know, I really, you know, go to heart with them because I was once you, man. So I feel where you're coming from. And that's what makes life so unique with me now, man. You know, I love what I do, and I love giving back, you know, and that's just the highlight of my life. You know, it makes me feel good when I give a person, and I don't look for nothing back in return. Because if I give it to you, I want you to have that. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
My wife would tell anybody, if I give you something, I don't even bat an eye. I don't even give it a second thought, because that is what I wanted you to have. Now I'm on to the next program, you know?
Yeah,
we got to, with these young ones, man, we got to help them form a plan, man. We got to help them, you know, stick to the plan they form, you know, instead of a plot, you know. A lot of people get that confused. They think a plan is a plot. It's not.
Right.
You know,
a plot is a plan.
Right.
A plan is a plan and a plot is a plot. And, you know, that's why I said, you know, I'm so glad that we're working with the champ. And we definitely got a plan with the champ. And we're going on what champ plan is. You know what I mean? Our job is to just iterate and help champ get to the plan and the format and stay focused on what his dream is, you know what I mean? And that's what's lacking out here in America too, you know, because I tell people, if you don't raise your child and your child hit these streets, the streets will raise them all in the wrong way, and so many of them don't come back to live to tell their testimony, you know what I mean? Because they're either 10 feet under or in the penitentiary telling their testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
So we have to be very careful on what we do and what we say and how we interact with our children, you know what I'm saying? Because your children is not going to interact with you if you study calling them dumb, stupid, you ain't going to be nothing. And just imagine how many kids go through that on a daily basis from their biological parents. It don't even have to be no step-parents. You got kids go through that on an everyday basis out here, you know? So that's something we have to stay focused on too, because you'll tear kids down before they even get started being built up, you know? So be careful on what you send your kids out here, you know?
Yeah,
I totally agree.
So with that being said, Charles, you know, I would like for you to let the viewers know where they can go buy your book at and give them the website and all of that so they can get started as soon as they get off the line going to buy them books, my brother.
Okay, well, I'm going to leave them with a few words first. Since we talked about the plan and the plot thing, just a few inspirational words that I wrote. Then we'll tell them when we get the books. This is a quote from a book I'm working on called The Windows of My Soul. It says, I don't just write all fiction, so everybody know. I do have a poetry book called Touched by Two Souls, and this is going to be an inspirational. I want to bring out a book that for every day of the year, a person is going to be able to turn the page for 365 days and get some inspiration from January 1st to December 31st. And we were talking about plots and planning. So I wrote this piece. It says, a plan will help you become successful. A plot will leave you stressful. There are times in life that we get these two confused. When you make a plan, you sit down at a table and formulate a formula that will take you from A to Z. It is a map that will help you get where you are going. When you plot, you undermine the plan, and it usually has the negative attributes attached to it. Don't get confused. When you decide that you're going to come home and start studying at 5, eat dinner by 6, and be in the bed by 9, that is a plan. When you decide that you're going into a bank that you have no account with and hand the teller a note demanding something that is not yours, that's a plot. Remember, you cannot plan to plot.
My man.
So I just want to say, everybody, you can find my books on for you ebook readers, Nook and Kindle. All my books are on Amazon and Barnes and Nobles. You can just type in my name and it should come up. Also, I do a lot of, if you're on my Facebook page, you can hit me up for any of the books, and I'll sign them and mail them to you. But, you know, those are the best ways to get them. Website is under construction right now. But, you know, I'm readily accessible. Email is cjb6810@yahoo.com. Facebook is The Storyteller, Charles Burgess page. For a lot of you, if there's somebody out there that's listening and they can't afford a book, hit me up. You'll get a book. You can also join my page, The Ghetto Sopranos page. That novel, I gave the complete novel away free on Facebook. Just join the page, scroll all the way down to the very first chapter and read your way up. One of my signature books, that one is free, right on Facebook.
My man, you know. And any shout-outs you'd like to give, Brother Charles, to anybody?
Yeah, let's give a shout out to Cynthia Miller for being on the show, author of In Rare Form. I know she's working on her second book, On Rare Occasions. Very powerful first book there. Rhea, thanks for being on the show, the champ. I'm giving it to all the listeners who didn't say anything. Glad you guys came to the show. And of course, to the Streets Don't Love You Back movement. I joined y'all movement a while back. I was actually on the show listening to the show you did with Cynthia Miller, and I just thought it was a very powerful movement, and I subscribed to your site right away, so I get all your literature that comes through email, and I just think it's something very great to do, and I think every city should have this movement letting the kids know that the streets don't love them back.
Hey, we appreciate that, Brother Charles, you know. So we like all our listeners tonight. When you get off the line tonight, we will ask you to go immediately over to Mr. Child's site and buy his books, download his emails, you know what I mean, and his e-books, and get to know Mr. Child and get to know what he's doing also to give back and help others as well. So we just want to say that right there, and we also want to say we sent out much love and respect also to Ms. Cynthia. She was on our show. And it was a great, powerful show. And her book is a great, powerful book. So we ask you to go get a copy of that book as well and in rare form. And we just thanking God for being able to be a platform for many across the country every week, you know. So tune into the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show every Wednesday night. And we would ask everybody who's listening who has not joined our movement page to go to www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. And don't forget, April 21st, the champ will be fighting at Sullivan Theater up there in Phoenix, Arizona. Don't miss it. All the information is on our movement page. And we asking everybody to stay rallying in your neighborhood, stay rallying in your city, because there's so many of our youths out here that's getting killed, and so many things are getting swept up under the rug. And so we asking everybody, don't just rally for one day, 2 days. The rally must continue on a daily, daily basis, because that's when they know that it's real. You feel me? If you stop, they ain't going to understand it. But if you keep it going on a daily basis, letting them know, I care about not just my community, but I care about my youth, and I care about the elders and everybody else in my community, you know. And if you got a bad seed in your community, you already know what to do. He need to be in jail too, or he need to be educated for he won't be in jail or for he won't be dead. But we will not tolerate you destroying our neighborhood, and we will not tolerate you messing with the elders and a lot of these women getting killed in fountain trunks of the cars. We tired of all of that. We tired of the babies getting killed. So let's keep them rallies going across the country. And much shout out to Trayvon Martin's family, and our prayers is out with the family, you know. And with that being said and done, I'll turn the mic over to the missus.
All right. Thank you, Charles, for being a gracious guest on our show and sharing your life and your stories with us. We really appreciate it.
Not a problem.
We appreciate you and all that you do as well, and we look forward to networking with you a lot more in the future. I would also like to give a shout-out to the host of our Keep It Real show in Cincinnati. We haven't found out all the details yet, but by one of his Facebook posts today, we found out that one of his cousins was murdered earlier today, a young teenager. So, you know, we're going to find out a little bit more about what happened with him, that we give him our deepest sympathies out to Deontay's family in Cincinnati. And once again, you know what, this all comes too close to home. And we need to definitely, you know, we can't all go out and conquer and change the world, but we can change our little corner of the world, our little community. All we have to do is stand up and, you know, make some changes. Stand up for what you believe in. Get together with your friends and your family and make a difference. You know, it's about setting goals and reaching and teaching and educating. You know, we have to educate our kids. We have to show them how to respect themselves so that they can respect others, because without the respect and the love for themselves, there's no way they're going to respect or love anybody else. So, you know, we have to instill in them as young children. We need to pay attention to them. The kids that are out running in the streets and gangbanging and turning to those things at young ages are really crying out for help and crying out for somebody to pay attention to them. And so, you know, as we, you know, look around us, just, you know, try to pick out one or two kids in your neighborhood and talk to them and try to figure out, you know, if there is a problem or what's going on or how can I help you? What do you need? You know, like in Rob's case at one time, and also with Champ's case at one time, you know, they needed a pair of shoes. They didn't have anybody in their lives that were giving them just the simple necessity of a brand new pair of shoes. You know, and in Champ's case, you know, he was walking around with holy shoes. His parents were into drugs. They were in and out of prison. And his grandfather bought him a pair of shoes, you know, and said, if I give you these shoes, if I go buy you some brand new shoes, will you stay in the gym and work out and do this and that? And that was one of the life-changing things for Champ. And, you know, as we educate and help Champ to learn how to share his testimony, you know, he'll be sharing these things with the kids. And, you know, it's a simple thing as that, a simple necessity, you know, love, clothing, food, shelter. It's all the basics of life that everybody needs. And just somebody saying an encouraging word to you, you know, like you can do it, or, you know, you're special. You know, just simple things like that really mean a lot to people and can really be life-changing to a lot of people. So we just encourage everybody to, you know, reach out to somebody. You know, pay attention to things that are going on around you in your neighborhood, in your community, and just start there. And then, you know, if it's your cause or God's will, then things will bloom and you'll know what you need to do. But definitely, you know, things need to change. And, you know, day by day, I guess, we all just do the best we can. But God willing, you know, we can work together and maybe make a positive change. So we're going to close out tonight. We want to share this song with you. It's a young man in Detroit, Michigan.
Can I say something before you play the song?
Sure.
I just want to let everybody know who's listening, if you're still there. The streets don't love you back, movement is just not this Wednesday. It's every Wednesday at the same time. They have a different guest on here, and they're touching on real-life issues dealing with these kids and how to help them and how to take the streets back and show these kids that the streets don't love them back. So this isn't just Wednesday with the storyteller. This is every Wednesday. So y'all tune in and give your input and maybe be touched and see where you can help, because we all need your help to make a change.
Amen.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, and it's not just every Wednesday. It's every day, 24/7. We have our website. We have our TV shows, our web shows, our, you know, we have educational brochures. We have our books. We have so many things to reach out and try to help and, you know, join the movement, join a group on there, you know, network with us. Order our books. We have The Streets Don't Love You Back and also Never Hit a Woman. That's about domestic violence. So, you know, we have a lot of causes and a lot of things that we do. You know, if you want to help out, reach out to us, and we'll definitely, you know, do what we can to get you where you need to be.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Charles, you know what I'm saying? And once again, I appreciate Ms. Cynthia as well, you know. And once again, I wanted to say to the champ, we appreciate you, you know, changing your thought pattern around, man, into a positive pattern, because, you know, that's the first nature of law to anybody when you change that negative pattern into a positive pattern, because your thought pattern is a major key to any type of success that you're trying to accomplish in life, you know. So I just want to thank you, champ, for that, you know, and give a big shout-out to your Tata, you know, and for everybody that don't know what that is, in Spanish, that's grandfather. So we give a big shout-out to the champ's grandfather and his whole family as well, you know. And without further ado, we're going to close out with this song. And like we always say, the streets don't love you back. Stay focused, stay prayed up, and much love to everybody. See you next week.
All for you. You know that it's all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.
All for you.
The way that it goes.
All for you.
You know that it's all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.
All for you.
You know that it's all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.
know that it's all for you, baby. Everything is all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.